Cuomo News Radio, everything you need to know. Now, Newsline with Ken Schramm.
Alisa Jaffian for Ken Schramm, 6 minutes after two. School is just around the corner, starting to think about what to put in their lunches. What are the clothes they need before they start the school year, that back-to-school shopping? What are the notebooks and all that kind of stuff? But there's something else you should be thinking about. What is going to be on their computer? What is on their electronic devices that you need to know about in order to protect your children? Because there are increasing dangers from cyber predators that kids face, especially as school starts up. And Linda Criddle is with us. Linda is an expert in security and internet and online technology and how to keep our kids safe and prevent them from being at risk of these cyber predators. Why do you think that we have to worry right now as school starts up and as we're gearing up for this time of year, Linda?
Well, there's a couple of real things there, Alisa. The first is that a lot of kids will have new gadgets, a new phone, a new tablet, a new computer or laptop, and so just the requirements around thinking, how do I make those devices safe from, you know, the type of criminal exploit like malware and all. And then there's the new school friends, new social interactions piece that kind of requires not only hardening the technologies, but making sure that your students have the skills they need to use those successfully.
Okay, so there's a lot of education we need to do amongst ourselves and with our children to make sure that things are safe for our kids. I know U.S. Attorney General Jenny Durkin just came out yesterday warning that cyber predators are spending a lot more time hunting down their prey than we might think.
Well, yeah, and let's make sure that people, that the listeners understand cyber predators can be, you know, after people to physically exploit them or to financially exploit them or to emotionally support them or to trash reputations, bully them, etc. So when we talk about cyber predators, it's important that your listeners have all of those types of predatory behavior in mind.
Because it's not just them figuring out that by us posting a photo on Facebook of a kid wearing a football jersey that they know that that means that child will be at that certain high school on that Friday night for that football game. That's how they can track them down. That's how they know that your house is empty as well, because they figure that everybody's going to be going to the football game that night when they see that photo on Facebook.
Yeah, there's a lot of information that gets posted about students on school websites.
We had a little glitch there, and so we're going to work on getting Linda back on the line. But with school starting up, you know, the kids have their laptops, and they're going online. The parents really need to be on super high alert about the dangers that children are facing in cyberspace. You want to figure out, especially if they've got this GPS and the location services on your phone, I never let them know where I am when I'm holding my phone. It says, do you allow this? You know what? Because that allows Facebook and everybody else to find out where you are. And if your kids have that and somebody's trying to track them down, you just want to make sure that they can't find out where they are. And these internet photos that the kids are posting, everybody puts their pictures on, you know, on the internet. And these are posts that really last a lifetime. They're not going anywhere. So you want to teach your children about that and about hiding that critical information. Like I was saying, if you you don't want it out so that everybody can see it, you don't want it to show where you might be. I know some kids who say, hey, going to this game tonight or going to be at this location. They list their every single move. And Linda Criddle is an internet safety expert with us. Linda, I was talking about how we should probably, one thing we should do is if all the kids have phones, make sure that GPS and location service on the phone is maybe dismantled. Linda, you there?
Yes, can you hear me?
Oh, now I can hear you.
Okay,
so
good.
I would say, so for the first thing is get rid of the GPS service on the phone so that the kids, you know, people don't know where they are. They're not able to track them as they've got their phone.
Yeah, and that takes two things. That's turning off the GPS-type services, but it's also understanding that if they post photos from their phone, that those photos may be GPS and time-stamped, and they need to make sure that the services that they're using do not display that data, because you can say, well, I didn't have any location tracking on, but as you're clicking pictures everywhere and posting those, that may track the location.
Okay, help me be smart, because I didn't understand that part of it. I just knew the GPS thing. What else do we need to do as parents?
Well, look at the websites that they post their pictures to, and right-click on those pictures and see if you can find what's called metadata, data about the picture there.
So you right-click on the picture and you look for metadata. So what might be an instance of something you're talking about?
Well, it'll show things like what camera is being used and, you know, aperture settings. But many of them show the time, and they'll also show the exact location. And so even though the person posting the picture thinks, oh, I haven't told anybody where I'm located, the picture may tell it anyway.
Okay, how can we turn that off?
Well, you can't, unfortunately. Unless you say, I'm going to take this picture, and before I upload it, I'm going to put it into a program like Microsoft Paint, and then cut that out.
Okay, so that's not going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. So they need to know if the services are doing that, and they need to complain to the services if they're doing that.
Okay, so you want to make sure that the kids aren't posting things that they don't even realize they're posting, because it's not information that just shows up. You have to click on it. And if somebody else has access to these photographs that you might not want them to see this, they can tell that the kid might be right at the grocery store right at that moment.
Yeah, and the other thing with photos now that parents really need to get up to speed on is all the advances in facial recognition technology and how many applications are using those.
What do you mean?
These are technologies that will let, for example, Facebook multi-point your face and be able to recognize your face in any picture, anytime, anywhere. And so they collect that data about your face that lets them identify you. And
okay, so you might think you're okay, but somebody else could have a big group shot of you at a high school gathering or something like that, and it automatically recognizes you.
Yes, so first, students, frankly, everyone, should have turned off the functionality that others can, you know, tag them in photos without at least being able to view that photo in advance. And there are settings in Facebook that allow you to do that.
Okay, so turn off the tag. What else?
Yeah. Second, you should object and turn off any facial recognition technology.
And is that on there? Does it say that?
Yes. Yes, you can opt out of it. But so you go through the settings and opt out. It's one of those new areas that we don't yet know how much, you know, potential damage or privacy loss can come from somebody being able to identify you anytime, anywhere. But if you think about it, it's not just, oh, they can identify me in pictures on Facebook. But that can be, you know, combined with information from, you know, your mall security cameras or store security cameras and say, oh, not only do I recognize her on Facebook, but I can see all the other places she goes because I can recognize that picture.
So you're starting to track down the whole pattern of this person, which is exactly what somebody who is preying on a youngster would like to be able to do. Linda Criddle, thank you so much for helping us to understand some of the newest techniques on how to protect ourselves from these predators. Appreciate you being with us.
This is Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
219, Alisa Jaffe in for Ken Schramm. Barnes & Noble is seeing 50 Shades of Green, thanks to 50 Shades of Gray. The big bookstore is talking today about reporting fewer losses than expected and is attributing that to 50 Shades of Gray, the series, because it's become so popular. It has sold more copies, 40 million copies around the world. Never has a book aimed at an adult audience sold so many copies so quickly, outdone the Harry Potter series. It's written by a woman for women, and it's all about this bondage and discipline and dominance and submission and sadism and masochism lifestyle. It's set in the Seattle area, as you know. It's a trilogy, but it's really taking off, this genre of writing. And Joey Hill is the author of Hostile Takeover. Laura's Cave. And you have been an erotic romance writer for a long time, Joey. And you are actually, in real life, a submissive. You're not afraid to talk about that with people out there. But why do you think suddenly we are all talking about this? It's been so secretive. We never talked about bondage and discipline and dominance and submission.
Well, I think it's just one of those things where a lot of things came together at the right time and the right moment. You basically had a situation where in the past 10 years, erotic romance has been out there. There is a certain number of people and women who have already discovered it, so they've been trying to encourage their friends toward it. And then you had digital publishing, which makes it easier on your Kindle or your Sony to read a book that's a bit more risque and without, you know, facing censure of your neighbors or family. And I think women as a whole are starting to feel more comfortable embracing their sexuality and being more confident about that. So,
but when I read 50 Shades of Grey, I read the trilogy, and I was down in Mexico, and every single woman at the pool had one of the three books. Every single woman, whether she was 18 or 55, and they didn't put a little brown bag on it. They weren't covering it.
Well, I think there's definitely the thing that when you find out everybody's reading it, it's much more easy to put it out there.
Right.
Hey, yeah, I'm reading it too, because she is and she is and she is. So I think it is accumulation. It, all of a sudden, it's, everybody's reading it, so it must be okay.
You know, we were talking around the office because basically everybody I know has read it, and we're not saying that it's the most amazingly written book, but you can't stop reading it because you want to know what's going to happen next. But we were talking about it and referring to it as mommy porn or mommy erotica, and you think those are derogatory terms and really a little too naive.
Well, I do. The reason is, to me, well-written erotic romance isn't mommy porn. I think our society has this archaic need to belittle women, to make them feel ridiculous for exploring and embracing their sexuality. And our sexuality is a core piece of our self-esteem. And so it stands to reason a sexually confident woman is often a confident woman, period. So I think mommy porn is just one of those typical immature reactions the way our society deals with sex.
It was just such a catchy phrase, you couldn't help but say it, though.
Well,
I didn't mean to belittle women, but I was saying it just like the next gal, you know. And when I looked at a photograph of you, because you've got a book out, you've got a lot of different books out, and you've written about, you know, erotic romance with characters from vampires to witches to angels to cops and boardroom executives. I look at this photo and I think, you know what? She looks like somebody I could have seen at the PTA meeting. Or did I run into her at the co-op the other day? You just look like this every day, like my neighbor. And then to think of you being involved in the submissive dominant relationships, it surprised me. And that's me making a big old stereotype, you know. But what is it that attracts you to this lifestyle?
Well, I've had...
And don't forget, we're on the air.
Definitely. No problem there. I think I've had submissive inclinations since I was young. I mean, there are people who just have it in their blood, like being gay or straight, essentially. And then there are people who just, they discover it later in life as a way to spice up their relationship. So I guess for me, it was more of the natural inclination. I discovered it in myself when I started writing erotic romance, and I embraced it then. And what appealed to me, I'm a very control freak type of person, very obsessive compulsive in a lot of ways. The jobs I've held in the past, I've held a lot of responsibility. You know, like a lot of women, I've, you know, 100 balls in the air at once. And the way things work these days, you know, we aren't in a position a lot of times to feel like we can at some point let down our guard and surrender ourselves and say, trust someone to completely take us over and give us pleasure. And
but it's interesting
submission allows that.
The submission allows that, but it's amazing how much the submissive also has control over the dominant, because there wouldn't be a dominant if it weren't for a submissive. So you've still got some of that control. Joey Hill, the author of Hostile Takeover, Ella's Cave, and so many other books, thank you for being with us on Newsline PM.
Como News Radio, everything you need to know. Now, Newsline with Ken Schramm.
Here they come home. James Magnuson in lane four.
Difference a little gold around your neck can make. After winning two gold medals in the London Olympics, Nathan Adrian the amazing swimmer who won the gold in the 100-meter freestyle, the 100-meter relay. He earned a silver medal in the 100-meter freestyle relay, has come home to Bremerton, and now you're signing the autographs. The chicks are checking you out. Things have changed, haven't they, Nathan?
Yeah. It's been an amazing reception back here at home. It's a little different than when I used to come back to Thanksgiving during college, but, it's still great to be back.
What is the difference? What have you noticed right away?
people coming up and asking for autographs or for pictures, and people sometimes just kind of looking at you like, hey, I recognize you, but I just don't know where from. I mean, I look a lot different than I did during the Olympics. I mean, I'm wearing clothes now, I guess.
You don't walk around town in your Speedo?
No.
Tell me some of the big events that you've got coming up, because I hear you're going to be on The Tonight Show this week with Jay Leno. Are you throwing out the ball at some ball games, things like that?
Some stuff is in the works. I might have to go to a pitching mound and practice a few times so I don't mess it up and don't have like a permanent mess up on YouTube somewhere.
You know Jay Leno is going to ask you if you pee in the pool, don't you?
Yeah. Yes, probably.
And how are you prepared to handle that one?
Yeah, I mean, just like anybody else. I mean, it just doesn't bother me. I'm not going to tell you one way or not whether I do it, but when people do it next to me, it doesn't really bug me that much.
And you can tell when they do it next to you?
Yeah. There's subtle clues that go on. I mean, either they're kind of like, oh man, I don't want to go into too much detail, but they gotta kind of move the water around that area just so it doesn't get too yellow.
Okay. What about endorsement deals? What has changed for you, Nathan, after getting all of your medals? Do people come after you and say, okay, we want you to do a Nike swimsuit, or what's happening?
Well, I mean, I hope so. All that stuff is going to go through my agent. You know, as with everything, I would never want to endorse something that I don't properly, you know, understand or actually use or approve of. So, I mean, it takes a little bit of care to actually pick a good product that I agree with.
What have you locked down yet? Have you any?
We're still working on that right now.
Yeah, because I thought you might have an agreement with Speedo, I read.
I do. Well, currently, through the Olympics, I had an agreement with Speedo, and I was on the Got Chocolate Milk campaign.
Oh, so those are fun. So is this the way you see yourself being able to fund your college education, or what do these endorsement deals mean to your future?
I mean, they just mean I get to continue doing what I love. It's pretty incredible that to say that, looking forward, I can live and train and really just focus on swimming instead of, you know, doing anything else or getting two jobs to try to support this.
What does it take to become an Olympic athlete? The amount of time, the money, I can't imagine.
It takes a lot. I mean, even when I was a kid, my mom was driving me 1 hour each way to and from practice. Luckily for me, I live and train down in Berkeley, California, so, you know, practice is only about 10 minutes away these days. But, I mean, it's a full-time 24-hour job. I mean, if I'm not actually training, all the little hidden small things that go into it are just as important, like your diet or making sure you go to bed early or, just getting enough rest and not breaking your body down more than it needs to get broken.
Really? How many calories do you need to consume a day, and how many hours of sleep do you need a night?
I'd say probably, you know, depending on training, because we'll go through a lot of different phases, anywhere from 5,000 to 8,000 calories. And then, you know, at night, I probably sleep around 8 to 9 hours. But, uh-huh. I mean, I take a solid 2 to 3 hour nap every day, which is kind of by design.
Really? You need to get that nap in?
Yeah, well, I mean, we're waking up at about 5 o'clock in the morning, so then I'll swim for a good 2 hours, eat, and then come back and sleep until the next practice.
You know, you had to have had one of the all-time best moments of the Olympics in London. Talk about when you're up there against the reigning world champ, Australia's James Magnussen. It's in the 100-meter freestyle, and you touched the wall, and it looked like you guys touched the wall at the exact same second.
Well, we did. We did touch the wall at the exact same second. It had to go down to the hundredth of a second, I guess. And I mean, it was one that made the difference between gold and silver. And it was I mean, it's tough to get up there against a guy who has gone so fast in the past and who is the reigning world champion. But, I mean, there's a reason why you swim the race. You know, you go to the Olympics with even the slightest chance of a hope to win a medal, and you want to compete for it.
Were you scared when you're up against him? I mean, we see Michael Phelps getting into his zone, listening to his music. What were you going through? What was happening in your head before you had that race?
You know, I'm very internal when it comes to preparing for a race. I really try to do everything right for myself and don't let any of the things outside of what I'm doing affect me. So whether or not he was right next to me, or whether or not he would have been, you know, a couple lanes over, it really wouldn't have mattered, because I was really trying to swim my own race and trying to go as fast as I could.
But 1/100th of a second, I don't even know how fast that is. You know what I mean? When you realized it was you, what happened in your heart?
It dropped. it dropped. I mean, I had to do a couple takes at the scoreboard, you know, make sure that one was actually next to my name. It was quite the surreal feeling. I mean, I can kind of close my eyes and go back to it right now. It was just so poignant.
We're talking to Nathan Adrian, our hometown Olympian. And, you know, I assume you've heard this morning that the journey is over for Diana Nyad. She was trying to swim 103 miles from Cuba to Florida without a shark cage, and they pulled her out of the waters today because she had a strained bicep muscle. She could barely walk. She had welts from boxed jellyfish, a lot of different hits from that. She was severely sunburned. What do you think about making an attempt at swimming 103 miles, Nathan?
I mean, I think it's incredible, and I think it shouldn't be framed as her quitting, but her having a success at swimming almost halfway, or maybe a little over halfway, I'm not sure. I mean, that's just remarkable how far she's gone in those conditions, and the fact that she's even attempting to go all the way is just kind of mind-boggling, to be honest.
Yeah, because that's a lot different than being in a pool with a lot of chlorine, isn't it?
It's, oh my goodness. I hate open water. I hate open water, and I have a really, really hard time swimming in it, to be completely honest. I mean, if I ever do, I have to be no more than about 5 or 10 feet away from my dive buddy. So it's
really?
No
so you could
me.
You wouldn't even attempt anything like this?
Not a chance. Not a chance. there's not enough money in the world for me to try to attempt to swim from Cuba to Florida.
Yeah, and in her case, like you said, she didn't quit. They pulled her out of the water. The dangers were just too great to her, but you think she still accomplished a lot.
Oh, she accomplished a ton. I mean, it's incredible. It's just such an incredible journey that she's gone through, and you know, whether or not she tries it again, I mean, she's still a success in my mind.
Nathan Adrian, really appreciate you being with us. Congratulations to you. You made us all proud. Thank you.
Thank you guys for having me.
Reporting the news, understanding the news. Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
Alisa Jaffe in for Ken Schramm. It's 11 before 3. A fun bunch of flicks out this week on DVD. Brian the Movie Guy with the rundown.
Hi there. DVD and Blu-ray.
And Blu-ray. Okay, you rattle them off because I'm ready. Anyway, okay. To have fun just sitting on the couch is okay by me.
The biggest one, the biggest title is probably The Dictator with Sacha Baron Cohen. He did Borat and Bruno.
Oh, and he's a brilliant performer, and all I know is that he was going to show up at the Oscars dressed as the dictator, so I never heard anything about the movie other than he was threatening to show up at Oscars or Golden Globes or something like that.
Right, yeah. Well, okay, I'll give you a little history on my thoughts on his movies. I thought Borat was great.
Mm-hmm.
I loved that most of the people didn't know what was going on.
Right.
Not the whole movie, but most of the people, he would pull these pranks on and as that character, and it worked. Bruno, where he plays the designer,
the model,
was not as good, admittedly not as good as that one, but I thought there were some funny parts. The Dictator is more set up like an actual movie. It's scripted. Everybody's a part of the joke.
So does it work when everybody's in on the joke?
Not as well.
Really?
That was my biggest problem with it. It was some very funny parts.
Uh-huh.
And it's a political satire about a guy who runs his country, and he comes to America, and people don't know that he's this dictator, and he's trying to get his place back in his country. Anyways, it's comedically crude, shocking, and offensive, that stuff you would expect, but cinematically it's flat, forced, and flawed. And I ended up giving it a C+ because you will laugh just as a movie experience, it just didn't work that well.
Because the one thing when you're saying about Borat, you did look at the people and you were so amazed. You're feeling the same reaction as they are when you see some of these unbelievable pranks and antics that he would pull.
Yeah. And he did a little bit of that, too, in Bruno. I mean, there were still some people who weren't in the know. But this one, everybody's in the know, and they tried to set it up like an actual movie instead of a string of skits, you know.
Okay.
And again, some very funny parts, but beware.
And beware of the offensive nature, because he's very good at that. Now, you mentioned Bernie, and when I look up Bernie, some people say this dark comedy is amazing, and I never even heard of it.
It was in theaters for about, and select theaters too, for maybe 2 months. I mean, and like towards the beginning of summer, it trailed off kind of midway through summer, but it stars Jack Black and Shirley MacLaine. I would say easily one of Jack Black's best roles.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, so who is he in this movie? So, because we know him from School of Rock and so many other things. What is he playing this?
He's playing he's a beloved citizen in this small town, and he kind of befriends this elderly widow, played by Shirley MacLaine, starts to be... do everything for her. They just had this great friendship. So there's a touching part to this movie. It's weird because it's got all these. It's touching. It's funny. It's tragic. It's also a legal thriller.
I heard it's based on a true story.
Yeah, small Texas town. This guy befriends this elderly woman and starts doing all these chores for her. They form a great friendship, and then it comes to a point where she doesn't do anything for herself. He does it all. And people in the town later come to find out that she has been dead for several months. So it's this legal thriller in that. Did he do it? This is a guy, by the way, that everybody in town loves.
So they all love Jack Black, but now all of a sudden there's this question on, is he the killer?
Right.
As they do this little bit of a dark comedy. And I heard there's a little bit of a documentary style in this film as well.
Yeah, it's got it's filmed really, the way they put it together is really cool. And it's a shame that it wasn't... out longer for people to see, but now everybody can see it because it's on DVD and Blu-ray, but very subtle in its execution, but it just worked. And Jack Black, you know, you cannot be a fan of him in some stuff, but this one, I thought he was fantastic. It was good to see him do something different, something unique, and something that he nailed.
So Bernie, one of the picks of the week, and you give this a much better grade than The Dictator, it sounds like.
B+.
Okay, B+. Now, here's one that everybody gave the A to, A Separation. This is the one that won the Oscar this year for Best Foreign Film from Iran.
From
this
Iran,
movie.
I'm going to go art house on you here.
Well, that you know me. I love my art house, so go for it.
A lot of people put this in their top 10. I'm the kind of guy, when I put together a top 10 list, I thought this movie was fantastic. I'll never watch it again just because it's just kind of depressing and dark and slow. And
so I'll watch it 10 times.
You'll love it.
Yeah.
You know, pop in Captain America or the Muppets instead. But it's about this, about a marriage breaking up in Iran, and the wife wants to leave. The husband wants to stay for family reasons. He's got stuff going on there. But it's just, it's very profound and compassionate in the way it deals with human behavior, family ties, morals, honesty, beautiful acting. But again, it moves very slow and it's subtitled. So that's not for everybody. But if you want something that's emotionally and morally compelling, I would highly recommend this. I give it an A-. Ups my cred with the art house crowd, whatever.
Oh, if that's all you're doing
it's a wonderful movie.
Throw out your Disney one real quick before we go to break.
Disney Nature's Chimpanzee. They come out with one every Earth Day. They've had Earth, Oceans, and then African Cats. Beautifully intimate look at a family of primates, and it's narrated by Tim Allen. You know, kids love it. It's you learn something as an adult, but they're entertaining movies. They're not great movies, but they're fun.
Hey, why don't we say rest in peace to Ivan the Gorilla and go watch the Disney Nature's Chimpanzee. Thank you very much, Brian, the movie guy, for being with us.